He's God, just as I am.
Please be seated.
I want to invite you to turn in your Bibles to Luke chapter 15. Starting in verse 1, Luke 15. Once you get there, if you're holding an actual Bible, you can hold your place there and then flip over to Luke 14 in verse 1. Actually, do that opposite. Put your thumb in Luke 14 and we'll be in Acts 15 or Luke 15 first. So, anybody confused yet? Good. All right, quick poll. How many extroverts do we have in the room? Extroverts, raise your hand. Let me hear you. Extroverts. Yeah. Don't worry, introverts. I'm not going to call you out. I'm assuming the rest of you are introverts. If you're an introvert, the most terrifying thing you can possibly imagine is what we just did or something like it. Somebody asking you to raise your hand. You don't like the special greeting times when I say meet somebody around you. You're like, I hate this. I wish somebody would pull the fire alarm right now. We all have these social circumstances when we wish that we could be somewhere else or we wish the circumstances were different. And the introverts that I know in my life, it's all kinds of things. It can be, it's not because they're not friendly. It's not because they don't enjoy spending time with people or having really deep friendships. They just don't like small talk. They just don't like situations where they're expected to perform or to live up to a bunch of social expectations. And what happens is that a lot of us find ourselves in situations where we get uncomfortable like that. Even for the extroverts, you have social nightmare scenarios, right? For some of you, it's if you're going somewhere where you don't know anybody at all, and you walk in, and maybe it's a room, it's a place where there's going to be a meal served, and you walk in, and there's a room full of people, and there aren't any spots for you, except maybe right at the very front. And some of you, even, you're like extreme extrovert. You walk up to the front, and you're like, yeah, yeah, everybody, look at me. I'm going to sit right here. Don't know any of you? Welcome. And you're like, what's your social security number? What's your bank account number? And you meet everybody at your table, and you just cut through it. But for most of us, we get really nervous. Most of us have been in some kind of situation at some point in our life where maybe you were going somewhere, you didn't know a lot of people, but maybe you knew one or two people. And you show up, and they're already at a table with some people that they know, and there's no seats left. And you realize, I'm on my own. I did youth ministry for 12 years, and I can tell you there were a lot of awkward moments that I got to witness. And sometimes I would intervene, and sometimes I would just let it play out. But it involved bus seats, and who got to sit where, and it involved tables and who got to sit where, and it involved bunk mates at camp and who got to sleep where. And sometimes there would be fights and conflict and all these things. And like I said, sometimes I kind of step in to try to rescue a disastrous situation, and sometimes I just sit back and watch the carnage. Well, many of you have seen the movie Forrest Gump, I think. If this is working, if it's not, that's bad. Let me try this again. There we go. Did you do that or did I do that? Okay, that's not a good sign. All right, here, can someone take that back there for me and see if we can get that working? All right, Forrest Gump gets on the bus and he comes to the first opening, and what does the kid say? Seat's taken. And then he comes to another open spot. Taken. And he comes to another spot. Can't sit here. And finally, he sees the most beautiful thing he had ever seen in his life, who will become his best friend, Jenna. And she says, you can sit here if you want to. And he sits down. And then there's the school cafeteria scene in almost any movie. We can go to the next slide. Where you walk up and maybe you're at a new school and you don't know anybody and it's already enough pressure, and you walk up and you don't know, where do I belong, where do I fit? Those people kind of look like me. Will they welcome me? We all know what it's like to not be welcomed. And this definitely happens when we're kids, but some things don't really change. We eat with those that we love, and even in the lives of children, it can be seen that tables, in particular, are places of inclusion and exclusion. Tables have power. Meals are at the center of life, and who we eat with and how we do life around tables reveals what and who we value. So it's no surprise that we often find Jesus around tables in the Gospel of Luke. And I didn't know this, but approximately 1/5 of every sentence in the Gospel of Luke and in the book of Acts, also written by Luke, approximately 1/5 of all the sentences contain some sort of reference or appeal to a meal. There are meals and tables all over the place in the gospel story. And what we see in these table scenes actually gives us a picture of what Jesus is all about. If you want to know what the kingdom of God is all about for Jesus, if you want to know what Jesus says really matters, if you want to know what he values, then look at what he does and who he talks to and who he interacts with around tables. Let's look closely at what he says and does in Luke 15, starting in verse 1. Now the tax collectors and sinners were gathering around to hear him, but the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." It's really important that as we look at these table scenes over the next 4 weeks, that we understand that in that culture in which Jesus lived, eating with someone conveyed acceptance, friendship, value, and respect. Meals and banquets were used to reinforce who mattered and what mattered, who was welcome, who is in, and who is out. Not just socially, but religiously. Those who were considered righteous and powerful and wealthy and important were invited to many meals and gave many meals. Those who are poor, those who are sick, those who have diseases, those who had made a mess of their lives, tax collectors, prostitutes, the homeless, the not good enoughs, the spiritual zeros, most people believed that God's judgment had been made clear on those people by their life circumstances. And therefore, they were not welcome at tables. Certainly not tables where important religious people like Jesus were. And it became really important in their culture to make sure if you were throwing a party that you made it clear who was invited and who wasn't invited. It became really important to make sure that you're making a social and a religious statement with who gets to come to your table. If you get to come to my table, then you are on God's side and God is on your side. And if you are not invited to my table, then the judgment of God must be upon you. And so they would use this. Imagine how gossip works and how social interactions work. Imagine middle school and high school girls. Sorry to pick on you girls, but imagine the dynamics at play there. And out in front of everyone to see on a social level, that's how these meals functioned. If I like you, you're at my table. If I don't like you, you're not invited. And it was a step further than that. When religious people gave a meal in a banquet, they invited the people that they thought were acceptable to God. No invitation means no spot, not just at my table, but at God's table. Jesus, listen to this very closely, because I think this is good news. Jesus doesn't care about their boundaries and their rules. He comes to turn the tables and to show who indeed has the favor of God. Who is welcome at God's table, his table of grace. And Jesus comes to show that that invitation is open to all. Let's look in Luke chapter 14, verse 1. One Sabbath, when Jesus went to eat in the house of a prominent Pharisee, he was being carefully watched. There in front of him was a man suffering from abnormal swelling of his body. Jesus asked the Pharisees and experts in the law, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not?" But they remained silent. So, taking hold of the man, he healed him and sent him on his way. Then he asked them, "If one of you has a child or an ox that falls into a well on the Sabbath day, will you not immediately pull it out?" and they had nothing to say. When he noticed how the guests picked the places of honor at the table, he told them this parable. When someone invites you to a wedding feast, do not take the place of honor, for a person more distinguished than you might have been invited. And if so, the host who invited both of you will come and say to you, give this person your seat. Then, humiliated, you will have to take the least important place. But when you are invited, take the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he will say to you, friend, move up to a better place. Then you will be honored in the presence of all the other guests. For all those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. Then Jesus said to his host, when you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers and sisters, your relatives, or your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back, and then you'll be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. Although they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. When one of those at the table with him heard this, he said to Jesus, blessed is the one who will eat at the feast in the kingdom of God. And Jesus replied to him, a certain man was preparing a great banquet and invited many guests. At the time of the banquet, he sent his servant to tell those who had been invited, come, for everything is now ready. But they all alike began to make excuses. The first said, I've just bought a field and I must go see it. Please excuse me. And another said, I have just bought 5 yoke of oxen and I'm on my way to try them out. Please excuse me. And still another said, I just got married, so I can't come. The servant came back and reported this to his master, and then the owner of the house became angry and ordered his servant, go out quickly into the streets and alleys of the town. Bring in the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame. Sir, the servant said, what you have ordered has been done, but there is still room. Then the master told his servant, go out to the roads and country lanes and compel them to come in so that my house will be full. I tell you, not one of those who were invited will get a taste of my banquet. There's a couple things I want to invite us to notice about this story. The first is that religious people like to build walls. Jesus likes to open doors. Religious people like to build walls. Jesus likes to open doors. And when I say religious people, you need to know that I'm talking about myself. There have been so many times in my life when maybe because of my own spiritual insecurity, I felt like it was important to make sure that the people around me that I somehow either communicated indirectly or directly, that I was inside and they were on the outside, because I might not have been sure about my own standing, and I had to make sure that I convinced everybody, especially myself, that no, I'm inside and they're outside. And I think that's something that a lot of us probably struggle with. And so I don't say that flippantly, but I just want to challenge us that Jesus comes to open doors. The second thing I want us to notice is, especially if you read the whole Gospel of Luke and the book of Acts, you will see this theme over and over and over and over and over again. It's a theme that scholars call the Great Reversal. You think things are this way? No, they're this way instead. You think that this is the way things are supposed to happen? Just kidding, this is how it's really supposed to happen. You think that these are the people that are on the inside? No, really, they're on the outside. And these people over here who you thought there was never a chance for them, they are insiders. Those who think they're in Luke's gospel, actually find when they confront Jesus that they are far away from the heart of God. And many who are actually far away and who assume that they're out, they're found right at the center of the action of what Jesus is doing in the world. The third thing I want to point out is that you can be at the feast, but not really experience the joy, intimacy, and love of the table. And that's the one that I want to spend the most time on. You can be in the room, but end up leaving all the food on the table and your place setting completely untouched. You can be invited and present, but not embrace the welcome. Have you ever been invited sort of last minute, you know, and you show up somewhere and you feel like it's your responsibility to sit back and wait just to make sure everybody, you know, okay, I'm not really supposed to be here. I got invited last minute, and here I am. I'm going to let everybody else go through the line. And somebody says, no, come on, go and get in line. And you're just, there's this tension inside. You don't understand. I got invited last minute. I'm really not supposed to be here. They just tacked me on at the end, and I'm just going to wait. That's how a lot of us, me included, we live our lives this way. We come here each week. We sing the songs. We do the practices. We study the Bible. We listen to the sermons. We smile. We lead Bible classes, and some of us even preach. And yet, when the very voice of God tries to speak into our hearts, that we're welcomed at his table of grace, we stand at arm's distance, insulated from his love and acceptance. And I can't speak for anybody else in the room except for me. I know that I do that because I don't feel worthy. People like to give compliments and say nice things most of the time to preachers. It's very interesting, the contrast when, from being a youth minister, sometimes you do a thankless job. And then to transition into a role where I get told every week by many of you, and I'm grateful for this, I get told, hey, good job, or thank you. And you need to know that I'm grateful for those things, but inside, every time one of you says something to me like that, there's another voice in the back of my head that just says they're just being nice. Or they need to get out more and hear some real preachers. And so none of us are immune. Our elders aren't immune from this. The people, the most spiritual people you know in your lives aren't immune from this. None of us are immune from this feeling that we are not welcome, that we are not allowed, that we have been invited on accident and it's been a mistake. Someone else's invitation got lost in the mail, and so there were some extra seats. So, okay, you can come in. And we come in and we spiritually stand against the wall. And maybe as we sing songs and as we have opportunities to share our lives together, we might outwardly, in some sort of extrovert trick, learn how to cover it well, but we're really internally standing against the wall, stiff-arming everyone else and God because we're ashamed. We don't feel worthy. No one knows. But you know. And the voice of shame and guilt and fear and hurt and regret screams in our ears louder than the soft whisper of love. We can have all the right theology and still feel deep down inside that we are unlovable. And that's why little things like being in a room where all your friends have gathered at a table and there's no more seats, that's why little things like that that really shouldn't bother us that much end up really, really affecting us deeply, because it affirms what we've been telling ourselves and what the evil one has been telling us all along. See, you're not really loved. They don't really care about you. You're not really welcome here. You don't really belong. And these things that happen, these little things, these social things, sometimes accidents, they just affirm what we feared all along. That in the end, there isn't room for us. Some of you may have seen the movie Antoine Fisher. Antoine is an angry young man in the Navy who gets sent to counseling after several violent outbursts and fights. And throughout the course of the story, you find out that his father died before he was born, and his teenage mother gave birth to him in prison and then never came to find him after she was released. His foster parents sexually abused him. And at 14, he left their home and he lived on the streets for several years until he decided to join the Navy to try to rewrite his story. And yet, as many of us know, you can change the furniture, you can move to a different location, you can change the job, and then you find out soon after you get there that it's just the same you in a new place. And his anger comes out, and he he gets violent. He's gone his whole life with shame and guilt, never experiencing rest, never feeling at home, never feeling welcome. He's never met his real family. And as he struggles to deal with his anger and experience a life of joy, he decides to go searching for his mom. He finds an aunt and uncle on his father's side of the family, and they help him track down his mother. And eventually he comes face to face with her. He asks her why she never came for him, and she, ashamed and overcome by guilt, sits in silence and stares ahead and won't even look at him. He gets up and he leaves. He forgives her on the way out. And having just said goodbye to the only real family he's ever met, wondering if he will ever really know what it's like to be at home, whether or not he will ever be welcomed anywhere, he gets back in the car with his uncle, and his uncle drives back to his house to this scene. Let's watch this video. Jesus welcomes us to his table, and he takes our faces in his hands, and he says, I know you. You are most welcome. Because there's still more room at the table. There's more room at the table. We don't have to act like gatekeepers, like there won't be enough seats for us if everybody keeps coming in. We don't have to stand in the corner against the back wall, assuming that someone else will come in and take our place so that we can quietly slip out the back. There's still more room at the table of God. Can you imagine what your life would be like? How it would be different if you woke up every day hearing that voice, that today you are loved, today you are welcome, today you belong here. How many of the things that we do and that we chase after, how many of the toxic relationships that we find ourselves in, how many of the things that we pursue because we're looking for value and worth, how many of the destructive decisions that we have done because we're trying to find that welcome somewhere else, how many of those things would no longer be important to us because the Spirit of God, the truth of the voice of Jesus has spoken into our hearts and told us that we're welcome. What would it be like if we gathered around God's table, around God's feast, and as welcome guests, we began to wake up each day and decide that we're going to live our lives and be defined by the welcome we receive here at God's table. I want to invite James Guillory up. He's going to transition our thoughts to this table. And I'm going to invite some of our elders and some other volunteers that I've asked to come and serve at these tables. You'll be invited in a moment to come and receive the bread and the cup from this table. My brothers and sisters, if you will permit me, and I'm just going to say here before I do this that I'm very hesitant to do what I'm about to do, because it actually kind of terrifies me a little bit, and I think it may come across as arrogant, and I don't mean it that way at all. I just, if you'll permit me, I want to ask permission for the next moment to actually channel and speak aloud the voice of God to you right now. And so if you have ever wondered what God's voice sounds like, it doesn't sound like this. But maybe wrapped up in flesh and blood will help us hear these words. And I invite you to close your eyes and to hear him say, "You are mine. I know you. I've seen it all. I know what you're hiding. And I still like you. You are loved. You are welcome. Come to my table of grace and mercy, because there's still more room. Room for you, even for you. You are loved. You are mine. You are welcome."